Strap in, operatives. This is Go Back, your all-access pass to modern-day RPGs, loaded with bullets, backstories, and a whole lot of bad decisions. And here are your mission leaders, Sean and Harrigan.
Wow. 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 What's up, bucko? What's up, Harrigan?
Inside joke, folks. We were just going through all of the little pet names.
Hey there, champ.
I like to use for people. Yes. I'm good, Sean. I'm good. How are you?
Doing all right.
That's better than not all right.
It is true. That is better than not all right. Yeah.
Oh, my.
Yes.
It's been a couple of weeks. We took a little work-powered, busy life-powered break. Not that our listeners will notice, because these will all be back-to-back, but we've been ahead in our catalog, I think, and we are not as far ahead.
No.
As a few things have intervened, but we're back on the mics. We're good.
Yes. What have you been involved with as far as covert action? Books, media, movies?
Not a ton. I would say this, recall weeks ago, many episodes ago, I mentioned that I was going to watch this Secret Agent movie, The Secret Agent. I think it's, I don't remember anymore if it's on Netflix or Amazon, maybe it's Amazon. I've now come to understand it's actually a Spanish subtitled movie. So I think it's a bit of a slower, you know, got to pay attention, got to engage with it. Right. So my wife and I were going to watch it weeks ago. It slipped off the radar. And when I remembered it, went back to it, I'm like, oh, this is actually, like, I can't have this on in the background. I gotta watch this bad boy. So I've queued it up again. So I should be watching it soon, but I have not kept up with my Bond reading because I've been busy with work stuff. As you and I discussed a little while ago, like, this is the busy season for my business. There's a bunch of things going on. So I've been pretty occupied with that. I will say, though, that like the two Delta Green games that I am, one I'm running and one I'm in, those are both progressing nicely. I'm a player in Operation Fulminate, as I think you know, and we've kind of gotten to the, what national park is it? Oh, I'm forgetting. Yosemite. I think it's Yosemite, I think.
That does sound right.
And broken up into, like, you know, the two teams are doing two different things. One team is interviewing the kid. I'm trying to pull up medical records and all kinds of stuff. So it's very procedurally, I'm loving it, is what I would say. It's very much like I'm the FBI agent on the scene. The rest of these jokers are like podcasters and historians and all that stuff, as we've talked about previously. So I'm able to be the kind of the adult in the room. So they're all like, we should talk to the kid and we should look at the myths and legends. And I'm like, is this kid the same kid really? Let's pull dental records. Let's get fingerprints. Let's contact the parents and let's contact the place where he was born. Yada, yada, yada. So I'm loving it, frankly, doing all that stuff. So it's been fun. And then the other game, the Duet, which I meant to mention before, I have named Delta Green Aria. Do you know what an Aria is? A-R-I-A?
I am not familiar with that word.
So I was quite proud of this when I came up with it. So in the operatic world, which is something I'm not very steeped in, or I don't have a deep understanding of, I'll read here. In opera, an aria is a self-contained solo vocal piece, usually performed with orchestral accompaniment, derived from the Italian word for air or melody. Arias are the emotional highlights of the opera, where the dramatic action pauses, allowing a character to reflect on their innermost thoughts. I thought pretty appropriate for a one-player Delta Green game, right? One player, one GM kind of thing. So it's kind of cool. It's kind of like a solo moment in an opera, which is what this game really is. It's a slow-moving game. Dirigible and I aren't quick posters in that game, so we're just getting to the meat of the thing right now. But it's been a ton of fun. It's been good. What about yourself? What have you been doing in espionage, Delta Green, covert action, etc.?
I did purchase the audiobook, the Ipcris file, but I have not started it. Maybe I started it, but I'm, you know, maybe 30 seconds in. It's not very far at all.
You're in the "this is audible" phase.
Narrated by? Yeah, pretty much.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Pretty much. So that's on my list of things to listen to. Delta Green, my game. Last week.
Impossible Landscapes.
Yeah, Impossible Landscapes. I don't know what session we're in for that campaign. 10, maybe? combat, whole session, 3 hours.
3 hours of combat.
I think it was a 3 hour combat. It was at least 2 hours.
Wow.
I mean, it wasn't all combat. It was, they go in to a place. They,
Setup and everything.
The setup, they leave.
It was all about the scene.
They come back. And so the situation is one player couldn't make it. I played with two players, or had two players on the docket, Jeff and my buddy Joe. And then Jeff's oldest son showed up, was there. I was like, hey, could I play? And I'm like, sure. So he created a character pretty much on the spot. So there was a little time there. Created a police officer in Massachusetts. So for some of those that know Impossible Landscapes, they will understand probably right around that time, right around when this is taking place, what I'm referring to. I won't go into spoilers, but essentially they are paying a visit to a house and things go sideways. And yeah, there were so three player characters in a combat against something that was pretty tough. They eventually overcame the obstacle, if you will, and then something strange happens, and that's it. That's where we pick up next session. So, yeah, that's
were any of the PCs injured or anything?
No, he didn't. The thing didn't. I'm trying to think. I think an NPC might have.
Okay.
Might have taken one.
Here's what I'm driving at, because I'm remembering now before we hit record here, I mentioned you had told me a little bit about this scene,
yes.
A few days ago, right? I'm remembering more now. I think the thing you should talk about that I think, and it's not just a Delta Green thing, quite frankly, it's more of a horror game thing. But you had a moment where the PCs recognized something you were describing, and you said they kind of ran up against something in the apartment or the town home or whatever. And it was just, to me, clearly that moment that's not D&D. That's not the, it's a troll and it has six plus six. Right. These are its weaknesses. I know what our capabilities are. I know about how many combat rounds we need to take it down. What you described was much more of an, oh shit, let's get out of here. Tell us a little bit about that. Like, I think the reactions the players had sounded like they were on point for what you want in a game like this, right?
They were. When it started to kick on, if you will, they were like, okay, I'm out of here.
When they saw the thing and something
which is started.
Not something you can say, it's one of these. You have to describe what a weird thing it is, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
And so then they went back in. And then it started up again. And this time it started up all the way.
But they noped out at first.
They're like, nope, I'm out of here. And then when it started up again, it was like, okay, it's going. Okay. And then it was, jumps out into the room. I'm going to go into the other room and I'm going to slam the doors behind me and it blasts through the doors.
Right.
And then it was, they realized, it's, they're in over their head.
We're not going hand to hand with this thing. If I Correct. Shoot this thing with a gun, nothing's probably going to happen, et cetera.
Correct. We need to get out of the way, which was refreshing because that's the action they took. And I say refreshing as in, all right, I pull out my gun and I take aim and I shoot. They're like, roll for initiative. Do, 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 do. Oh, I did 10 damage. It's still up. What's going on? This sucks. It wasn't that. They were very much like, yeah, okay. And I had the reason I think it took quite a bit, Harrigan, was because all three of them went in completely different directions.
Yeah, it's like when you say we played combat all night, many people, me included, are like, ooh,
right.
But if it's an interesting scene and things are just complicated because you have to, they're all going in different directions and they've tried twice to go into the house, I can totally see that taking that much time and being fun for everybody.
My buddy Joe literally left and fled the house. Left the scene, went across the street to a neighbor's house, barged his way into the neighbor's house.
Ordered a plane ticket, went to the airport.
Basically, yes. Asked the neighbor, do you have a shotgun? Of course. Of course, none of this is
luck roll.
Yeah, I don't know. It's not specced out. Give me a luck roll. Yes. Congratulations, Joe. They have a shotgun. Where is the shotgun? It's in the closet, right? Make it pretty accessible. Okay, I pull out the shotgun. Are there shells in the closet? He critically succeeds. I'm like, not only are there shells, it's freaking loaded, man. Fully loaded, ready to go. And he's like, fantastic. You know, so it goes, but to Harrigan's point, to kind of understand some of the details and what this all, he wanted something else. I don't remember. So he wanted, and I'm like, well, there's neighbors down the way. So he went out the backyard and down to the neighbors.
He's doing the whole thing. This is not just combat.
Yeah.
This is
so he's like, oh, the neighbors might have this because they're grilling out or something. So he's like, I'm going to go down there.
Lighter fluid or something.
Yes, that's what it was. I think it was like gasoline. And he's like, gasoline, anything? And I'm like, so give me a luck check. And I'm like, well, you can smell barbecue down a ways. Oh, that's what it was. Propane. He wanted the propane tank.
Oh, throw it at the thing and probably shoot the propane tank.
Bingo. So he's like, yes. So he goes down there, rips it out of a grill.
He's a problem solver.
And of course, to my point, I'm like, he goes, okay, so I grab it. Is it full? I'm like, give me a luck check, right? Like, how much is in there? And so that happens with Joe as two other people are like, Jeff's on the side of the house. His son's character is the cop. He goes into a cop car and he's backing the cop car up and, you know, going forward. There's a couple NPCs that are dealing with this thing. So it is very much like, okay, now it's your turn. This is where you are on the street. This is where it appears. Okay, can I do this? Yeah, absolutely.
So this thing's outside.
It's outside. Yeah. It blows
complications later, right? People saw this thing.
People did see that. Well, they think they saw this thing, right?
Yeah.
So
part of the cleanup phase.
In the end, I don't know if I should, like, I don't know how much is spoilers or not. It's kind of ambiguous, right?
Yeah, don't spoil it.
But they get to the end. But one of the things about this particular item I was talking to Harrigan about was that it, you know, the damage and what it would do or what you had to do to get this thing down. It was, I don't know how they were going to beat it, honestly. I'm like, because it was something to the effect where they would have to roll to hit. And if they needed a critical and it needed to be like an even number. Because if it didn't have some of those things, they weren't going to do any damage to it. And so in Delta Green, you know, if you have 35 hit points or a monster has 35 hit points and then it's got kind of like a damage reduction component to it and all this other, which it did as well,
what you're describing is an additional damage reduction mechanic, which says when you roll damage, if it's not even or odd, you may or may not do damage at all.
Right.
And I think we're going to talk about this next show, Sean, when we talk about a little bit more about the operas. Some of the operas actually have some sort of corner case or emergent rules in them around like NPCs, monsters, you know, parts of the scenario that are not covered in depth in the core books. It's kind of cool. These are not adventures and modules that are written that will work for any system generically. They're written for Delta Green. So they often will say, hey, when you make that percentile roll on your skill, if these things occur, this is what it means in this scenario, like you're just describing for this one opponent or creature, right? Kind of cool. I would say, Sean, one of the things I thought was neat that maybe we didn't talk about before and that maybe deserves some recognition, like your players are pretty bought in now from the sounds of it. You've always described Jeff as the guy who wants to play Captain Kirk, Han Solo, Indiana Jones, two-fisted pulp guy.
He listens to this. He'll take umbrage at that, but that's all right. I love you, Jeff.
I don't mean in a bad way at all.
No, but he thinks I'm probably meaning it in a bad way, but go ahead.
No, like he wants to punch evil in the face.
He does. He does.
Guy, right?
Yeah.
And you're describing a scenario here where the player characters weren't like, we can just take this thing. No problem. They understood the danger and jetted initially, which is so much more realistic than the whole like roll initiative, baby. It's on. I'll, you know, got my fireball kind of thing. And that's where you can get some record scratching in Delta Green, because the game will kill players who do that, or player characters will do that.
Right.
Not players.
Well, and one of the things too, the damage and what was outlined, I internalized to think, this seems as though it's very focused on whether somebody shoots it with a bullet. Yeah. And these guys were starting to ram it with a car.
And we're going to blow it up. And
yeah, and so I think with Delta Green, some of the caveats to some of the scenarios, if it, you run into a situation like that, you kind of have to go, well, it says this, so that's the rule. But also keep in mind, like, how much does a ramming car do in damage?
Yeah, you got to make some rulings, unfortunately.
You really got to get into it. And then if it's like, well, this is if it's a bullet, which is, you know, a 9mm slug or whatever, 45, and it's this big and it's going up against this thing that's made out of this material or whatever. And then you pull in a car going 30 miles an hour, like with a battering ram on the front, whole different
ball. Yeah, a police car.
Right, a squad car. Yeah. You know, you have to adjust. And so I'm glad they thought of that, because obviously I don't, you know, I'm a fan of the, you know, fan of the players. And the last thing I want to do is have them go this far and then one of their characters just get whacked because they thought that that was the answer and it wasn't. And it just shreds them to pieces.
Where are we, Sean, on spoilering or not various operas?
I don't know. I don't know if people are in the Impossible Landscapes and they'll be like, I know we are. It sounds that's where we are. We better not go in there.
Right. And I think for next week's show, we should probably state that there will be some spoilers, right? Because we're going to talk in more detail. For this week, let's hold fire. But I will tell you, this using cars as weapons is something that players like to do in these games. The same way they like to burn things down, right? Get this. Last things last. You know what happens in that little opera?
We do.
I have had the players use a car as weapon and trap something beneath it in that game. So it was still alive beneath the car. Like, yep, it makes for fun scenes.
It is. I laugh because Harrigan and I both know the scenario, and some of you that listen to this know the scenario as well. But it's funny because it's such a, it is a completely, you know, desperate move.
Yes,
and yes. Rightfully so. Like it is, and that's the cool thing about Delta Green is. When they say, we're going to blow this up, we're going to go get gasoline and fertilizer, and this is like, it's over. Done time, you know?
You know what part of it is, and this happened in Impossible Landscapes when you ran it, and I played in it along with Edwin and Lou and some others. I think Craig was involved early. This game, the players have to like this. I love it. But you have to like that WTF moment.
You do.
You have to like that. Yeah. But like Impossible Landscapes has a bunch of those. And in fact, some of them chain together in a way that gets you all turned around, right? And that's what it's trying to do. So eventually you're like, what is even going on right now? But something like Last Things Last, there's just these, it's much more mundane, much more procedural. You're just doing a thing. And then acutely, there's this, what the kind of moment, and it turns the players. It makes them like, oh my god, what am I going to do? How are we going to handle this? How are we going to? And there's this scramble that can happen where they have different ideas about how to handle it. They might go in different directions, just like what you just described. So I think we're taking some time with this, but I think that there's, I don't know, it's part of the game that I like a lot when the players are so bought in that they understand, like, when this thing happens, how would your PC react? Maybe it talks a little bit about what Hoos has talked to us about, which is this player's avatar versus the actual character in the moment. How would the character react? And it sounds like you guys did the right thing, which is awesome. Right?
Yeah. I applaud the group for doing what they did and even coming up with like, okay, I'm going to run across the street. I'm going to do your shotgun. Like, it's like a middle-aged woman who's got like one shotgun in the house for whatever reason, you know?
Sure. Yeah. It's Larry's before Larry passed away.
That's right. You know, and she was the big nosy body, you know, kind of snooty neighbor. And then when all hell breaks
taking
loose,
pictures out the window,
she was pretty complicit. Like, it's in the closet. Go in there. You know, like opening the door.
Why do you want a shotgun? Oh, I see. Right. It's over here.
Edith Bunker, the neighbor. Yes,
that was totally Edith.
Oh, Charlie.
It's over here. Archie. Yeah. Anyways, it's good. It's good. And now they get to figure out what, now it's at the end and everything is done and they were going to do something else. I'm like, we'll just call it right here. It's a good stopping point. You know, there's a police sergeant on the scene wondering what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah. So not to belabor it further, but I also applaud you on being able to introduce a drop-in player. Kind of cool. Not on the team, like comes in as the authorities on scene, and they just happen to have to ally because of what's happening in the moment. It's a pro move, man.
And I will say, Jeff's son is a police officer in real life. So,
even better.
He created a police officer, not by any prompting of my own. And he's like, I'll create a constable. And I'm like, fantastic, because I know exactly in this scene how to get you into it. Yeah, and the thing is moving forward, if he's like at tonight's session or not, it doesn't matter. And if he comes about in the near future, it'll be the Powell from Die Hard who just shows up and is like, WTF, right? He may know these guys kind of or run into them. Or he'll be at his desk and I see a vignette kind of occurring where it's like, what are those guys doing? And what was that about? And he starts kind of like, who is the guy at the house? Maybe, you know, because there's a connection there.
This is Jeff's son, you said?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it may be that if he likes playing with you guys and you invite him in, this is his on-ramp to the world of Delta Green.
Well, and he's like, a Call of Cthulhu player. So Logan.
I don't mean the player. I mean the cop.
Yes.
This is the cop's inciting incident.
Right.
Is what we're talking about.
Very much so. Exactly. Yeah. Yes. That is his entry into the DG world. Absolutely.
Yeah. And so if he doesn't play again, no blood, no foul. But if he does,
right,
there's the phone call like, so what was that thing?
Or Jeff and those guys like, we got to talk. We need to meet up. And then they recruit him or they tell him like, here's the deal. You got to shut up and we need you to burn these case files or whatever, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And on top of that, I'm starting to implement the outlaws.
Oh, nice.
So there's, you know, before all hell broke loose, there was a car that was sitting across the street that just kind of pulled up and nobody got out of it. And then the cops showed up and that car was like, you know what? I think I'm going to get out of here.
This is the tease. This is the breadcrumbs we've talked about on prior shows where you introduce these elements, the factions, slowly to get them like worried about it, thinking about it. And then so it's not quite so cartoonish when suddenly, ta-da, the bad guys are here. You know, yeah, surprise! You don't have as much of that. So that sounds like your game's going well, man. In the early days, you were a little bit like, I don't know. I think you got it going.
I do. I think it's going to be much better. I hope these guys don't listen to it and hear about the outlaws because they don't know who's in the car, but so if whatever.
Well, at our production schedule, this won't drop till 28, so
I might be able to. Okay. Well, that's true. By then they'll know. By the time they listen to
2028,
this.
I mean.
right.
Yeah. All right, should we move on?
We should. We've covered SITREP. We'll get into encrypted comms.
We did not cover SITREP.
We did not cover SITREP.
That was,
so
that was just our what you
that was just our intro.
Moment.
Let's get into SITREP.
Give me the SITREP.
All right, SITREP.
Just a couple things, right?
Just a couple things. You want to go on with your James Bond?
Yeah, I know you're not very excited about it, but because we've talked about it a couple times before.
Yes.
Their new James Bond game, First Light.
Yes.
Which we talked about how some people thought the trailer was attached to the new movie that's in the works, et cetera, right? We've talked about it a couple times on the show. I only wanted to mention that it has dropped, it's live, and reviews are very positive, including from our buddy Digital Hobbit, who, yeah. So I am planning on picking it up eventually. And I think it's in that vein of like, multi-mode, like it's not just a shooter, like you are driving, you are skydiving, you are sneaking and infiltrating, you are socializing at a party. So it does a pretty good job of all those things. I don't have anything to say about it otherwise, so I don't own it yet, but based on one of the Pierce Brosnan era movies had an attached game. I forget what it's called.
GoldenEye.
No, it was well after GoldenEye.
Oh.
Because GoldenEye was that's the shooter mode of Bond games, yes. Right? The one I'm talking about, Everything or Nothing, maybe? I'll have to look it up. In any case, it was very much like, get a briefing, go to an exotic place, meet a person, drop a thing, get a car chase. And I think this game's in the same vein. So I'm just going to, you know, put it out there that I'm going to have a look at it because it's supposed to be pretty cool. People are buzzing about it a little bit. That's all I got. What you got? We got something from Dwayne, right? You're going to tell us about that?
Dwayne and I have brought this up in the past. Well, Dwayne brought it up recently, Mr. White 20. And then I have also heard of this. It's the 2026 Delta Green Mini Campaign Jam, which is going to end in 2 months, 24 days, 12 hours, and 46 minutes from when I am speaking these words, which means by the time it comes out, it will be out in 1 month, 24 days, maybe actually less than probably a month. But the Campaign Jam, if you haven't heard of it, we briefly mentioned it before, kind of in passing, but it's out and ready to go. It's a series of two or more separate scenarios connected by the same core threat, premise, or plot. That is the deal. And then talks about some example campaigns include these things I'm reading are going to be on Itch. We'll put a link in the show notes. But eventually, essentially, there's some rules and must be a campaign, which is different than the shotgun scenarios, obviously. 30,000 words or less, which is about 60 pages. So you got a lot of latitude to make it happen. It's got some advice.
That's a pretty beefy thing for a jam to do.
It is beefy.
Jams are usually like, you know, quick hit kind of thing.
Yeah.
It just kind of goes to show what we talked about, I think, weeks ago at this stage or maybe months ago. The community is pretty well supported from independent third-party content, right? You got the Fairfield Project stuff with the shotguns. You've got this itch.io mini campaign. We also had something similar around the Night at the Opera Reddit. Ran something as well. There's like three different annual content generating things. So if you do the math, you know, as the years go by, man, there's so much material for this game. It's kind of crazy.
It is going to be, all submissions will be backed up to the Fairfield Project, to fan run Delta Green Wiki / fan scenario repository. So you'll be able to get these from there when they, I think, go live and get put up there.
I think we need to do an episode on Fairfield or
for sure.
We've also talked about doing an episode with third party creators, right?
We have.
Yeah. Speaking of that, Sean, we haven't talked about what our topic is today.
We have not.
I know we still want to do encrypted comms, but maybe it makes sense to talk about why before we do that.
Sure.
So we've had a couple of minor kind of write-ins and whatnots, and part of that has to do with the fact that we had this production schedule that let us put a whole bunch of episodes in the bank before we released them. So we were obviously not getting a lot of feedback. Well, some feedback has finally started to roll in from the new season, and we thought we had enough of it that we would take some time today, and we would dive into some calls and write-ins and actually talk about what our listeners are looking at and are thinking about, right?
Yes. I could have framed it up that way. I thought you were going to out me for not being overly confident with the topic that we originally had planned.
I wouldn't do that to you. I wouldn't tell everyone that we're in our third week of you not being prepared for the opera discussion. I would never do that.
Yeah.
We're ready now.
We're next ready. Week, let's get into encrypted comms.
There you go.
Sir, we have an incoming encrypted transmission.
So we have one write-in comment, and we have two voicemails or audios of varying lengths.
Okay.
Want to start with Hoose's?
We could do that.
Do you want to read it?
Let me bring it up. And this is from our Discord, your Discord, the GoBag channel.
I like to think of it as our Discord.
Well, it's the GBS Discord. Our channel, maybe. Who knows? All right. So this comes from Hoose Carl, better known these days as Hoose. He's kind of shortened it. He's kind of like, I don't know, like when Prince went from Prince to like the symbols, Hoose has done something similar from Hoose Carl to Hoose. Sean O'Harrigan, he writes in the GoBag Discord channel, just got done with season 2, episode 4, The Downward Spiral. This might be the best episode yet. Love the way you peel back the layers and dive deep into the methods and mechanics of sanity and bonds. You uncover what can happen in the game. would love to hear an episode with several home scene vignettes on this potential. So that's not his question. He's got two questions, but any reaction to that other than thanks, Hoos? It's nice.
Harrigan and I were talking about this, and we were saying we could do home scenes, and then there was a kind of like, well, we kind of covered them in Sanity and Bonds. So I agree with Hoos. I think there's room for doing it. Home scenes, because I think some people may not know how to kind of roll with them. Like some may just go, oh, home scene, you know, pick something you're going to do, roll the dice. Okay, that's what happens. You recover sanity, you lose sanity, but you get a train, you know, a couple bumps in skill. But like what, how do those maybe play out and where and when?
It's a whole thing. And when we maybe was in, I think it was in that episode he's talking about, episode 4, where we got into the nitty gritty of the HVAC. There's actually a whole subsystem here for this stuff, right? I would be happy to dive in further. I think I need to think harder about what I would want to say about it that we didn't cover in the downward spiral, but maybe Hoos can drop some further notes in the Discord and we'll flesh it out. All right. He says, I now have two questions for you. So he's taking us to task here. He's like, you know, he's giving us the kudos and now he's like, This makes me wonder or think all other games need this treatment, diving deep into the nuances for player and GMs that make a game great. So in other words, the fact that we have focused an entire season on one game and are kind of not chapter by chapter, but topic by topic are like pulling it apart. I love the idea, Hoos, but I don't know if I have enough days left in my life to do this for many games. What do you think, Sean?
I think to his point, there is a space for it. And I think that comes into some of the discussion on, we touched on a little bit on reviews, very, very much in the moment, where there's the dilemma of whether somebody can read a game and still review it versus the review where you have to, you know, it's credible because the person's played it. There is even, I think, what Hoos is getting at is a level even beyond that, where you've played it over and over and run it as a campaign or one shots to, and you have to, and a certain sense of system mastery, and then you can kind of put out what he's alluding to, which is the nuances for player and GM that make it a great game. But there's also the nuances of the mechanics, the setting, and even just the players, right? Because we have talked about it again, where if the players aren't bought into what Delta Green is about and they're playing their case in point, Jeff, Joe, and the gang, and Logan could have like D&D'd that encounter, as a lack of better words.
And it would have gone badly.
Would have went very poorly and the game could have ended, period. End of discussion. So it helped. And it didn't kill anybody. It didn't like, I don't think they had this sense of defeat like they do in some other games, you know, and everything is fine. It adds to the story. So I do think that they are adjust, and they're not even bad. Like they're not all like the D&D player types that would get ruffled by the outcome of this combat scenario, if you will.
There are also many, many sessions in, though, and they've seen what the game has to offer. And they know the vibe now and all that stuff.
Right.
I think what Hoos is getting at here, and I think he's talking specifically about the treatment we gave the Sanity and Bond system in that episode, like do a similar dive on certain other aspects of certain other games. This all stems for us from our love of this game and trying to like get people who are not familiar with it yet to understand like it's a little bit different than, like your mindset has to be a little bit different, right? In terms of understanding the tone and what the game's about and the fact that it's not about machine gunning monsters. It's about, you know, your desperate struggle against cosmic horror and your unraveling and all that stuff, which you talked about at length at this point. But I do think a similar treatment to like what makes a pulp game hum as a pulp game, what makes a dark fantasy really different than a high fantasy game. If you're going to play a Cold War espionage game, what are the things that like the, what are the mechanics the game offers that support that? And how, what can the player latch onto, GM latch onto? You could probably pick slices of the pie. So in other words, instead of doing 10 episodes on Tiny Spies or on James Bond or on Top Secret, we could say, let's talk about the the tradecraft part of this and how people are communicating across the wall in 1960s Berlin, that kind of thing.
And I agree with you. It also helps if you listen to a show about a game, just a game, right? And if they double down and put it all in there, I think that is a niche, but it's not going to get tens of thousands of hundreds of listeners. But if somebody has a passion project for, say, something like Outgunned, and they just talk about Outgunned ad nauseum and what's going on within that system, then you could probably achieve some of the things that Hoos would appreciate about the episode we did.
Yeah. I don't know. Part of it is it does require a level of like thinking and analysis and experience with the game that I have with a lot of other games, or maybe I don't even have with Delta Green really, but
I don't know about that.
I love the idea. Let me put it this way. I'd love to take, have this be my full-time job and just do that for all the games that I own. Really, really get into them deeply. But to your point a minute ago, though, about like the value of focusing on one game this way, we also know that not everybody's into that. Right. We heard from fans of the show saying, I'm not that into Delta Green, so okay. And then we also heard, you're going to do it for the whole season? you're going to do multiple episodes, not just one? And we felt like there was enough with the Delta Green angle that we really could justify it. And I think we've already proven that with the amount of content that we've covered, right?
Right.
Shall I move on to his second question?
Yes, please.
Okay. He says, how has doing this season changed the way you GM or play Delta Green? I'll put that to you first, Sean.
Well, I think the first thing it does is solidify some of the fuzziness around some of the rules, I would say for sure. Like if I thought the game or something was supposed to work like this, and then we talk about it for an entire episode, and I take that back to the table, it's just kind of repeating and it being ingrained into Sean's brain on how to run it. So I think that is better. So when I get to combat, I think even when I ran combat for you guys in Impossible Landscapes, Kerrigan, it was a little clunky, and I don't think I ran it as close to the book as I should have. And it still came out in the wash, but now I know exactly how to run it, how to even guide players because they may not know, and that makes it a better experience, I would say, and it's more consistent. Also with like home scenes and some of the rules beyond the scenario or in between that would like, what do the players opt to do and what choices do they have? Like they can go and seek therapy. What are they trying to achieve? Do they want to increase their sanity? Do they want to increase a skill? And then what avenues can they use to make that happen within the book? And I know those were in there, but I would want to try to do more home scene-ish scenarios that flesh out the character even beyond what is typical. Because I think, I don't know, if I look at TV shows and the ones that are successful no matter what genre, it's character development. It's the shows that don't have the character development, in my humble opinion, that just come up short and they don't last very long. And there's different ways you can do it, so...
The home scenes in some ways allow you to like become fans of the characters. Like you're suggesting on those shows, like I struggle with certain movies and shows where I can't either identify with or I don't like the protagonists. And this can be something similar where you're like getting to know them a little bit, you care about them a little bit more. But to is there anything else you want to cover that you've picked up that the season has changed about the way you run or play? It's a fantastic question, Hoos. I would say my perspective on certain things is unchanged and other things is dramatically changed. Sean's already hit the biggest one, which is the home scenes thing. But let me put that aside for a second. I have stumbled across a number of rules that I knew they were there. I knew they existed, but I hadn't plugged the two things together. One of the best ones is like damaged vets, where you're supposed to be a damaged vet. If you have any experience at all, it's not an option. It's like you go down this path then, kind of thing. The same thing is true for the way that you can use bonds to both protect against the insanity in the moment. What's the second version of it called, Sean?
Repressing sanity.
Yes, repressing insanity.
Insanity,
right?
Yes.
So I forgot that there was sanity.
Yes.
Whole game does that.
Yeah, right.
But so there are these little like the rules you're not using all the time that I'm just more familiar with now than I was when I was before we had covered the topics in depth on the show. But the biggest one of all is absolutely Bond's home scenes, the wiring of all that, and the fact that this subsystem is as robust as it is, where when you are between operas, you are making these decisions about, I need to go skiing so I can clear my head, or I'll go to the therapist, or I'll spend time with my kid, or whatever. It's all mechanized. And I did not realize it was as mechanized as it is in terms of some things suffer when other things go up. So I am really looking forward to exploring that kind of mini game in the two play-by-post games that I'm in. And I think part of this is that, Sean, we've talked about it, maybe even on the show, a lot of my experience has been sort of one opera, one shot, not the campaign game. Even with Impossible Landscapes, maybe we didn't lean into the home scenes the way we would now. In fact, we both, he's agreeing.
I agree.
We would change that, I think, entirely.
Yes.
To have whole sessions that were like, okay, when we're moving from one era to the next, even from one location to the next kind of thing, have these moments where you get to know the characters better and their home lives and all that sort of stuff. And quite frankly, I never realized before there was so much support in the game. Hushi might even remember me saying earlier in our episodes, Deltarune is not really clear about when that bond damage happens. Well, yes, it is, actually. It's pretty damn clear that it's the next time you meet the bond, which harkens back to the, hey, handler, note down the bond damage, not just on the character sheet, but when it happened, what it was. Now, was it a 4-point hit or a 1-point hit? And then when you're going to those home scenes and you're doing that stuff, that's when you dust off those notes and remind the player, talk about it out of character first if you need to. Like, hey, remember this thing when you use the bond to either repress or what's the other one called? I always forget.
Project.
Project onto the bond. That's right. You project the damage onto the bond. So you can have a little bit of discussion with the player and then get into the scenes. You're both sort of got the same footing for where you want to go with it. But I think those are mechanically, like, I think I have a pretty decent understanding of BRP. Like, I understand the fight back kind of mechanism they use in hand-to-hand combat. I know the weapon lethality stuff pretty well. Like, that most of that stuff is pretty standard trad gaming stuff, right? But it's these other pieces that are more robust that I wasn't maybe as aware of or wasn't as enlightened before we covered it. All right. Thank you, Hoos. Fantastic little blurb, a short little section. Generates lots of thoughts from Sean and I. Want to do the next one, Sean?
Yeah. We've got a voicemail from Laramie.
Hey, fellas. It's Laramie. First time calling in. Couple of quick notes. One, would like to thank Harrigan for acknowledging the once and future king, Hackmaster, a percentile-based system where when you fail, you learn something. And the next time you try to increase that, the ability, it comes up even better. I agree. It's pretty great. Second, Harrigan, in one episode, you pointed out you like a system where if you have no chance of succeeding at something, you just can't even roll for it, like brain surgery. Same episode, you said that you didn't like systems where someone could have such an overwhelming advantage that the other guy has no chance. I think these are at odds with each other because, you know, I'm never going to be able to out-wrestle a Olympian. So I shouldn't even roll for it. It's not even a chance. So I'll push back on that one a little bit. Third, for the segment of the show where you're looking at references and resources, read a really interesting comic series years ago. Just went back and reread it, called Zero. And it starts out as a really solid, straightforward, a little over-the-top science-y, but for the most part, good spy comic that quickly takes a swerve into weird fungi type organism things, maybe brain control, maybe not really sure. I can't wholly recommend it because the third arc takes a weird swerve into like authors in the United States in the 1930s and 40s and like weird parallel lives and all. I kind of lost the thread, but it's worth looking at. It's fun, it's interesting, but it's not perfect. Anyway, thanks guys, you're the best, later.
Most of it was towards you. I don't know.
I was like, you were hosting the call here. I expected you to say, thank you, Laramie.
Oh, I'm sorry.
What do you think, Harrigan?
Thanks, Laramie. Harrigan. Comments.
Yes. Let me, he talked about really the kind of the three things, Hackmaster at the front and the Zero comic at the end. I will look at Zero because I love brain fungus stuff, mind control stuff for sure. Hackmaster, you can keep, my friend. You know the deal. I know it has all the mechanics. It has all the stuff. And I think he's talking about second edition. I don't know the editions of Hackmaster. It's a later edition where they took what was kind of a jokey look at this game that came from the comic, and they turned it into like a full-on RPG that had mechanics for all kinds of stuff. I would love to play in a game of Hackmaster that Laramie runs, and then he's threatened before, right? So maybe a game hole some year, maybe he'll roll that out. We can experience it. The meat of this delicious sandwich that he's written in about, though, for me, is this idea of when you're skilled enough, you don't roll. But me saying somewhere along the line, there's always a chance kind of thing or something, right? I'll be honest, Laramie, I don't remember the statement I made or the context of it. Do you, Sean, by any chance?
Dude, I barely remember what you said 50 seconds ago.
I was going to say, you don't remember what you had for breakfast, but that's even better. So, Laramie, I will say this, because the way you state it, I agree with you, right? Like, there are certain things where you absolutely never have a chance. And in modern gaming thinking, many games actually systematize this. Two of the 2D20 games do this. A bunch of other games do this. So basically, when you're going to attempt something, like, you have no shot. You can't do it, period. Unless you change something, narratively, this thing would not happen. And then you go through the gamut of, you have a small chance, you have a pretty good chance, you have a great chance. And then there's something where it's like, yeah, my God, there's no way you could fail. So why bother rolling, kind of thing? I'm not sure what the context was, but what I would say with your wrestler, you can change what success looks like in these games. Up front, you can have the conversation, which is not you pin the Olympic wrestler, but it might be, can I escape one time from this person? Which you might have a shot at doing. You'll never beat them at, three pins, or if it's a closed room and then you have no way to get away or whatever, right? But I do think the framing of what you're trying to accomplish can change the odds for what you're trying to do. Some games are explicit about, what that means. In other words, an attack is an attack is an attack, or there are very specific grappling rules, in which case, the D20 is like the worst way to model that stuff. Because you get into the idea that one of the better ones, wrestling is good, arm wrestling. Sean, have you seen the dudes who are like the world's top arm wrestlers? Your fucking natural 20 is not beating them. It's just not. Unless it involves like you kicking their kneecap backwards, they have food poisoning, something like that. So I don't know. I think this would merit, I need to understand more about what I said. I don't remember, but overall there are absolutely situations where you just can't succeed for sure.
And to your defense, what Laramie has heard was something we talked about probably 2 months ago.
Correct. This would have been recorded back in July of 2014. I'm pretty sure that's what it feels like.
So that is not 2 months, but okay.
Yeah. Give me a timestamp, Laramie. Hit me up with that on the Discord, and maybe we'll talk about it further. But overall, I can't argue. I like both sides of this. I love the Delta Green. To bring it back to Delta Green, I love the take where there's a chart in the book that says, here's how experienced you are. And there's actual tangible advice about not making people roll all the time, because they understand that the percentile dice are a cruel, cruel mistress. Anybody who rolls, who plays these games knows D20s and percentile dice are one of the worst things is the whole like, you need a, you're really good at something, so you'll only fail on a 10 or a 90 or above or whatever. And damn it, in that moment, there's the 90. There's the 91.
Yeah, whatever it is. Exactly.
Yeah. Woo. Yep. All right. Thank you, Laramie. Good call.
Yeah. Thanks, Laramie. Next one from Runeslinger, a.k.a. Anthony.
Hello, Sean and Harrigan. I'm enjoying this new season on Delta Green, and in your recent episode, The Dao Rune Spiral, You had mentioned that you're interested in maybe hearing some stories of how people have used bonds in their own Delta Green games, and so I thought I would share a quick one that made a big impression on me when we first started playing Delta Green. We had a group of four agents, and as you've discussed in your episodes, these people didn't know each other. There's only what they could observe about each other did they know. So for one of the agents, this meant that we learned quite a bit about his personal life very early on, because there was kind of a messy interaction with it during our briefing, which I thought was very cool how that played out. But for my character, to all outward signs, they would see the trappings of a U.S. Marshal. That detail wasn't hidden. But he had previously been SWAT, and in the parlance of the game, was a hardened veteran. One of two in this particular assembly of agents. And so this group was carrying a lot of, you know, mental and emotional damage and baggage, and didn't have a lot of buffer or defense against further losses to sanity or composure. So it was quite an interesting mix. But outwardly, the character that I'm playing, the U.S. Marshal, he'd clearly suffered physical trauma somewhere in the past, and that had required, you know, a change of job or a change of status. But he's very polite, very professional, always on time, happy to talk to people, willing to socialize and be one of the point men for the group, do some, you know, investigation and social interactions, that sort of thing. In his very flashy car, he likes to listen to upbeat ska punk, and, you know, religiously, regularly throughout play, he's sending off text messages, presumably to his significant other. It has all the hallmarks of that. So we move through some pretty heavy play, bonds are burned and this sort of thing, and we get to finish off with a home scene. And this particular detail did become aware. The other characters, and of course their players, became aware of what took place, which was, after everything was over, he went home. He went home to, you know, presumably his wife or fiance or girlfriend or whatever they assumed it was that he'd been messaging all along. Well, it turns out the house that he shows up to is the home of his former wife and her current husband. And of course, the Delta Green agent that I'm playing shows up with flowers and just expecting to walk in like everything's fine, and he's figured everything out. He understands how now they can be together, and this new guy is, you know, no longer in the picture. Kind of delusional about their relationship, and walks up and is expecting to walk into the house. And of course, the current husband has an objection to that. And how can things get any worse, really? Well, they can get worse by our Delta Green agent engaging in assault and battery on the front porch, hospitalizing the fellow. And it's at this point, flowers in hand, that he realizes that this bond is well and truly severed. It has been burned. It's over. Leaving him with no other connections than those weaker connections that you have with the other agents. Well, at least until he can get some time alone with her to show her how he's changed, so he can rebuild that bond. You gotta have hope, right? It's a dark world, but sometimes you gotta have hope. Anyway, keep up the good work with season 2 of Go Bag and your excellent exploration of Delta Green. Take care.
Thanks, Anthony. Appreciate it.
Fabulous call.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad he wrote in with an example. He followed the instructions.
Yes. No, I mean, love to hear about the sort of the detail of it and that moment on the porch, light the bond. I like that the agent didn't realize it. You know, I mean, this is restraining order territory,
right?
With the wife. Remember that time when you put my husband in the, yeah. It's you know, all of the wife's relatives and her sisters talking about what happened that day. And you know what I mean? Like, yes, that is good stuff. And as we talked about, there is a way to rebuild the bond. You could picture now what those scenes might look like, right? If he sacrifices the other bonds to rebuild that one kind of thing. Sweet.
Yeah. One of the things that Harrigan and I were talking about off the air, I think it was last week or the week before, one of the things that I might explore, this might kind of go to what Hoos has been dropping us here and there. You know, how do you handle this? How do you, you know, separate kind of the players from their characters and not having them play themselves and things of that nature? But this is not exactly this or exactly that, but the thing about, you know, mental illness is that, and I proposed this to Harrigan, is that the person that has it typically doesn't know it. Like, they're not consciously aware of it. Like, we mechanize it in a game. And how, as a handler, can you do that and facilitate that within the game? And so with Anthony, I'm interested to know is how he pulled that off as a handler. Was it something that he and the player had agreed with and kind of came up with as part of the story element? Like, okay, the mission is over. You go home. You've burned through or projected 12 points of sanity loss onto this single, what will inevitably be their ex-spouse. Or was it they went home and they think they were going home to their, say, it's a male, female, and husband, wife, going home to their wife, and the wife's been married.
Yeah, in Anthony's case, I think his character was delusional.
Right.
And didn't know. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think and then realizing that they've been living in this, they're still together world. And I to Harrigan's point, I'm sure you alluded to it, Anthony, but I don't. You know, did you agree with that on the player ahead of time, or was it something where, okay, you go back home and that's not where you live and you haven't lived there for 8 months because you separated 8 months ago and you've been, now it comes to you, but
for
a minute we're together. Right?
Yeah, that would be might be a stretch for the GM to introduce all that. To have the player believe they are going home with flowers.
Right.
And the GM looking at that zero in the bond category and being like, actually, you know, it's been 6 months since you separated, and, you know, and on and on and on. And maybe you don't think you separated, but she does. Right.
Right.
Yeah. There's just so much richness that comes out of these things, because you can picture it. Like, does she complain to his boss? Does he lose his job? Does he go on trial? Which, and again, the game has mechanics for that. Right. Where you can actually be. Yeah, so, dude, so good.
Yeah.
I really like as well, just one more thing Anthony mentioned, that I've heard some actual plays kind of get this wrong as well, or not, I shouldn't say wrong, but they don't explore it the way I'd want to. Or there's an assumption that people kind of, they just either know each other or they share too much at the outset. Or it's not even that. It's more like there's a familiarity that they wouldn't have that they lean into, right? You're not friends yet. You're not coworkers yet. You've been thrown together. You don't know who the hell is sitting next to you in this car on this 6-hour trip. And you might remember, Sean, because I played a character in your house one.
Music from a Darkened Room.
Music from a Darkened Room with Hobbs and some others, right? Tony, I think, was in that game. Mm-hmm. I forget that character's name, but do you remember what he was like? Probably not.
It's been a while.
So there's a character idea I like for Delta Green. I played kind of two variations of it, one in the play-by-post, one in your game. And it's this damaged veteran. This guy's a special, like he's an operator, right? He's a special forces guy. Then when he comes back, the program's like, this guy will be good at bumping off like Delta Green agents that have gone astray or taking care of problems in that way. And in the play by post game that I played, actually run by Dirigible, speaking of him from earlier on the show, there's just this, like, I think I like the way we did it, where the other PCs gradually got to know my guy and were gradually like, oh, you're pretty f***ed up. Excuse me for swearing. But there is definitely this, like, you know, his approach is always like, we need to take care of that problem right now. Right. And meaning, you know, murder, trunk, buried in the desert, kind of. It wasn't that, like, I don't know, cartoonish and dumb, but it was always like, you know, I'll be the one that takes care of that if I need to, kind of thing. It was just this kind of grim, not grim dark, not goofy, but a very damaged person. But it took them a while to understand this person is so damaged. And I think that's what Anthony's getting at as well, is that, and it even gets back to what you and I mentioned a few minutes ago, which is just getting to know these characters, right? Because we all know when you first start off with a PC, unless you have spent a lot of time developing them and are really in the headspace, it can take time to understand who are they, what are their motivations. And there may even be situations where you're like, I wrote down a bond, but that bond's not really working for me, and that kind of thing, right? There's ways around all that stuff. But I do think it's these in-between moments between the operas where all that starts to make the whole game much richer, just like Anthony talked about. Like, what a fantastic scene that must have been. And then repercussions that follow, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Cool stuff. Appreciate the calls, the write-ins. Keep on interacting on the Discord. I don't think I think you checked as well. I don't think Spotify or any of the other larger places where the cast drop have got any comments on the new season yet. So we'll pull those in as we need to as well.
We will indeed. Hope you guys are enjoying yourselves, and we'll catch you on the next one. See ya. This episode of Go Bag, produced with help from the following friendlies, field operatives, special agents, and black ops directors: Joe Swick, Roger French, Mirko Froelich, Tony Sugarloaf Baker, Polish Ogre, Huscarl, Farty McButterpants, Laramie Wall, Eileen Barnes, Hepta Lima, Aaron Relia, Wayne Peacock, Jeff Walken, Yorkus Rex, Eric Salzwedo, Phil McClory, Jason Hobbs, Michael Holland, Remy Bilodeau, Crystal Eggstad, Eric Avia, Vornak, Brian Kurtz, Chad Glayman, Jim Ingram, Orcus Dorcas, Chris Shorb, Brian Rumble, Victor Wyatt, Kevin Keneally, Andy Hall, Jason Weitzel, Salt Hart, Tad Lechman, Nicholas Abruzzo, Matthew Catron, Curtis Takahashi, Angela Murray, Mr. White 20, Jason Connerly, Shannon Olson, Ryan West, Kristen McLean, Larry Hollis, Glenn Seal, Jake at Faded Quill Gaming, Tess Trekkie, Tim Jensen, Nubis, Christopher Lang, Qualog, Peter Skanes, Wendy Forcon James, Fraser Ronald, Dirigible, and Chaplain Grimaldus. Thank you, operatives.